Cool. Cheers, bud.
Cheers.
Yeah, finally got you. Last time you were in town, I didn't even think to do a podcast, and then we already were too late, and you were like, we should do a podcast. I was like, fuck, yeah, next time. So now we're getting one in.
Indeed.
Here we go. Drinking the old style Helaman's garbage beer.
I like it.
It's not bad, right? Reminds you of like a shitty German Pilsner.
I don't like when they say like the, I've got 20 beers on tap, like that waitress at the place just now. Great. What do you like?
Yeah.
Can we just read it, please?
That's why I said, do you have a beer tap list? Like, what do you mean? You're going to tell me you have 20 beers. You're not going to name them off. You're just going to say, tell me a genre and I'll tell you what we have. That's not an efficient way of doing it.
No. Just write it down. And also, I'm really sick of the fucking
QR codes.
I'm so sick of it. Let's just look at our phones more while we're at a restaurant.
Yeah. We came here to not look at our phones so we could look at each other.
Ugh, the worst. And it doesn't work. You got to zoom it in.
That's why I have the Fold. Works on that.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Joe's one of my oldest buddies from, man, I was probably 20. You were in your 30s, probably at that point. We were bouncing at our bodies.
Yeah. If you go way, way back.
That's yeah. Right. Yeah. From way back.
Yeah. Early 30s, I guess.
Yeah. And yeah. I was early 20s.
As we both think of the things that happened in that place. The gangster night, the
man.
Karma. Every other night, just the rockers. They were cool. You didn't have to do anything, but that one night a month,
karma. Those guys were
fucking nuts.
Those guys were nuts, and we did have a rocker night. I think it was on a Queens of the Stone Age. Something. It was some sort of rock band, and there's a bunch of methed out dudes, and we ended up fighting them in the alleyway. I remember knocking this guy down 3 times and he got back up like it was nothing. He was on meth. They're like fucking meth zombies.
Drugs.
Yeah, drugs are good. On that note, let's tell everybody about your background so people get to know you, where you came from, and then we'll get into what you're doing.
Well, I mean, if you go less far back in Luke and I's history, as we re-met in at PCC, and when was that? I can never put the years to when that was. I'm just like, it was when the stock market crashed.
2009?
Yeah.
So somewhere in there?
Early 2000s, I decided to go to school for substance abuse counseling. And the genesis of that journey was that I had had a drug problem myself. I grew up in upstate New York. I was born in the 70s, early 70s. Graduated high school in 89. Went into the army in Germany right at the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Cold War. Served over there 89, 91, 92. Or 91 was when I got out. And then when I was over there, I started smoking weed. My army buddies were all telling me how awesome acid was. When I got out, I started experimenting with acid in upstate New York, living in Buffalo, smoking lots of weed, started experimenting with blow and other drugs. Always had this kind of urge or inkling that I wanted to try heroin. Went back in the army because the employment situation in upstate New York in the early 90s wasn't very good. Went back in the army as an enlisted guy. And was in Oklahoma, speaking of meth, in the early 90s, and meth was really big. We started doing meth a lot. We would stay up from like the time we got up on Friday morning for PT at 5 o'clock and do PT. We'd stay up all weekend long, drive to Dallas, drive to Austin, do meth, do ecstasy, do acid, do all the drugs there were that we could ever get our hands on. Drive back to Fort Sill on Sunday night, stay up all night, go to PT Monday morning, go to work all day Monday, and then go to sleep.
What's PT?
Physical training, like push-ups, sit-ups, 2-mile run.
Ugh.
Oh, my God. So when I got booted out of, eventually that catches up to me and I get booted out of the Army in like 93 and 94. No, somewhere around there, 94 maybe. And I moved to Oregon and instantly found heroin and instantly went into a dark, I don't know, 4 or 5 year, like progressively worse heroin use until I guess it was 98 or 99 that I got finally arrested, had my probation revoked, did about 6 or 8 months in county jail, went to drug treatment, got out, and quote unquote was introduced to recovery. Took another, I don't know, so that's 99, like 2002 or so before I finally got it. So about 3 years of like in and out of recovery, use for a little bit, stop for a little bit, use for a little bit. Then I started to kind of get my life back together. Still smoked cigarettes, still didn't exercise because the Army had like totally zapped my love or enjoyment of exercise. Like working out outside in Oklahoma in the cold in 30 degree weather with the wind comes sweeping down the plains over your neck. It was awful. And like, you have to do it. There was like a uniform you had to wear. It was like Army gray sweatpants and like a sweatshirt with a hood that you were never allowed to wear because I don't know, like you wouldn't, the first sergeant didn't want to wear his hood, so no one else could wear their hood. You had this like terrible hat that didn't really do anything, and then like wool gloves with leather shells. That's the winter PT uniform.
Mm.
It was terrible. Also, I never washed my clothes. So it smelled real bad.
Why didn't you wash your clothes?
I was 17 years old. I didn't think you had to.
Oh.
I thought someone did that for you. Any rate, so yeah, the Army sapped my love of fitness. So I'd finally gotten into recovery. Didn't do anything for a long time. Worked a bunch of terrible different jobs, including that, I don't think the bouncing job was that terrible, but worked a bunch of jobs, car sales, lots of warehouse work, glass factories. Eventually, like I said, it was the financial crisis of the early, or that early 2000s or late aughts, yeah. I would say, that got me back into college. I had a friend from the Army days who went down the dark heroin road years after me, and I helped him get his shit together and was like, hey, that was kind of fun. And it was the one field at the time that I could think of that let you, it was better to have a criminal record than not. It's not necessarily true, but it seemed that way. And it was certainly a field where with a criminal record, you could still get a good job.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back to school. That's where Luke and I were reintroduced to each other and worked in that field, or got a degree in a substance abuse counseling. Worked in that field for a little bit while I was in school. One of the instructors was like, hey, if you smoke cigarettes, you should probably quit because it's not really fair for you to be talking about recovery and about how not to be an addict when you're in acute withdrawal symptoms from nicotine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd already started to feel like at that point in my life, late 20s, early 30s, that like smoking was kind of dumb. So, and like we smoked outside of our house, we'd stand outside in the rain and just smoke cigarettes and be like, this is so stupid. So when I quit smoking cigarettes, I put on weight. I was like, hey, that's not cool. I don't want to live like this. So I found fitness again, and it was just like Army style, push-ups, sit-ups, 2 mile run, 30 minutes of static stretching before I did anything. And then one of my other buddies from college was doing CrossFit. He's like, you should try this.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a very, very common CrossFit story. It's like you start doing it and it's very addictive.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time in that early phase where I was like, this is the answer. Using CrossFit in particular produces a physiological effect that's very similar to what addicts are looking for from the high. Like physiologically, what happens is your heart races and you sweat and you get a little nauseous, and then there's this endorphin rush.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens when you do CrossFit the right way, when you get it right so that you're not like injuring yourself or like going so hard that anyway, when you get it right, it feels very good. So I was like, this is what I want to do. At the time, the drug and alcohol field was professionalizing. So it was the beginning of the Affordable Care Act. More people could get on Medicaid. Medicaid could really bill better for master's level therapists than associate level therapists. So they pushed the associate level people back into college or out of the field altogether into the worst of the early jobs, working in methadone clinics where you get up real early and work with people who don't really want to be there. So I went back to school and was like, well, I might as well get a bachelor's degree in something interesting rather than get a bachelor's in social work and a master's in social work and spend 60, you know, another $60,000 learning the same thing again. So I got an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree in exercise science. And when I was there, I really fell in love with the fitness field to the point where that's what I wanted to do. I decided that that's what I wanted to do. It's like I feel a lot of the same sense of satisfaction working with people in the fitness industry that I did in the substance abuse industry. And like literally no one has died.
Yeah.
No one's died off of my fitness roles ever.
Right.
And certainly not from any dereliction of duty of my part have they died. And I mean, I lost 4 or 5 clients that were literally on my caseload that died while I was working with them. And that shit's just it's depressing.
Yeah.
So it's almost as rewarding and certainly not as depressing. And then one of the things I loved about CrossFit most was its use of the Olympic weightlifts, the snatch and the clean and jerk, the Olympic style lifts, otherwise known as weightlifting. I wanted to do it ever since I was a little kid. It was on a video game that I played when I was in like high school and grade school. So I knew what the snatch and I knew what the clean and jerk were, and I knew they were really cool. And when I got into CrossFit, that was the thing I was the most focused on. I was able to find a team in the CrossFit gym that I was with and just started to really focus more time on that. And 10 or 12 years ago, I took my level 1 certification, slowly built up my own little weightlifting club in Portland of like CrossFitters that I knew that became, some of them became national level good. And over, like I said, the last 10 years or so, I've built my club, Heroic Barbell, into, I would say, a fairly nationally recognized club, at least among the other people in the know. I developed a national champion in 2021 who made the USA weightlifting Pan American team. He also made the world team that year. That was the beginning of, not the beginning of COVID, it was 2021. So it was like the beginning of Omicron, and we were supposed to go to Tashkent, Uzbekistan, but there were some articles that came out from one of the big journals of weightlifting that was like, ooh, Uzbekistan's gonna get COVIDed out and people are gonna get stuck there. And the CEO of USA Weightlifting's like, we advise you guys not to go. And so my lifter ended up not going to World, so anyway.
Wow.
But we made a world team, and then slowly after we got back from Pan Ams, he fired me. Which is fine. In the sport, I was saying to Luke on the way when we were going to lunch that the weightlifters demand an amount of progress. And if you're not progressing them, and if they're not progressing, they're going to find someone who can. Whether or not it's their fault or your fault is always up for debate. But at the time, Ryan thought that somebody else would do better for him, and so he left. And, you know, it was fine. He left for one of the guys that I admire the most in the field, so it didn't hurt too bad. It did a little bit since he was my golden ticket, so to speak. But working with Sester got me more nationally known, and I was able to get myself on the level one teaching staff, where I now certify new coaches, go around mostly in the Northwest and teach level ones and bring new coaches on. It's pretty fun. I put on meets now. I was the meet director for the regional championships last year.
Yeah. Yeah. You were saying, you were telling me about some of the meets and the coaching. The thing I thought was interesting that we were talking about is you said that there's a lot of people that come to get coaching certified or whatever it's called that have never lifted.
Yeah, I mean, that's it seems like the last few have had that a lot. Those people, the ones that have done it that have never lifted, more often than not are physical therapists, and they're seeing, I think the reason is they're seeing people come into their practice who've been injured in it, so they just want a better understanding of the movement, and what better way to get an understanding of it than to get certified by the actual governing body, which is, so it's, you know, kudos to them. It's just a difficult, it's a difficult process to teach one person the very basics of it while you're trying to teach another person how to coach the very basics of it.
Right.
And also, like, just having some of those guys come in with, like, very little actual physical body awareness. I think I was telling you also, I just did another one where it was sports coaches at a D2 school. So most of those guys had played either D2 ball or competed at a Division 1 or Division 2 level, and those guys picked it up fast. Like, the difference between a, you know, collegiate athlete and a doctor.
Yeah, they've done resistance training before.
Yeah.
So,
or are just, even if they haven't, even if they're just like basketball players, they're just like more generally aware of their body.
Yeah, but most of those guys, they do some sort of resistance training, you know, basketball players.
Right.
They're in the weight room. You know, Kobe Bryant was, have you ever watched that documentary about the Redeem Team?
I haven't.
Oh, it's super good, dude. Super good. It's the LeBron, Kobe, and Carmelo Anthony, those guys, their year that they won the Olympics, like 2008.
Right.
Those guys would be out partying, and they'd stay up all night, and then they'd see Kobe in the morning when they're going to bed, and he's just getting up. And they're like, where are you going? He's like, going to the gym. You know? So he...
That's why he was going to lift
weights, you know. Going to lift weights. I'm going to the gym. So, they do a lot of weightlifting. But
yeah. But not weightlifting.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, they do weightlifting.
Weightlifting. The sport. One word.
Oh, I see. Weightlifting. Olympic lifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, not the sport.
So that's what's hard to teach. Yes, those guys came in with that kind of body awareness to do squats and deadlifts and know how to set up with a flat back. And could jump better and could, like, have, like, athleticism, where some of these doctors come in and they're like, and again, like, kudos to them for, like, trying to understand more what their clients are going through. But
yeah. Well, yeah, you trained me and my brother Jesse.
That's true.
When you were first getting started, we were your first clients, right?
Yeah, you were.
Yeah. That's true.
We were first paying clients.
We were your first paying clients, bro. We did it.
And Jesse got hurt the first day.
Because we did it at 24 Hour Fitness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had a membership.
Oh, God, dude. I remember he hurt his back. I was like, that was totally easy weight for you to do.
You were devastated.
I was so upset.
You were devastated.
Dude. I suck at this. I'm never going to be good at it.
You're like, oh, no. You're freaking out. Oh, no. I was like, it's okay, dude. It's okay. Like,
he's fine. Is he mad?
No, yeah, he was fine. He was fine. He hurt his back the first day. But I mean, he's a sedentary dude.
And then your other brother too, not Josh. Not Josh, the other one.
Ben.
Ben hurt himself all the time too.
Because Ben had a
I hurt myself disc. Reaching for something. I was like, that's not good, buddy. You shouldn't hurt yourself just reaching up over your head.
No, you shouldn't. No, but I remember learning. I wanted to do more CrossFit and, like, just burn fat type stuff.
Yeah.
And you were, like, pushing us to do Olympic stuff. And I was like, okay, well, let's just do some. And let's kind of incorporate a little bit of both. And you did, you were awesome. You did facilitate that. But
I did back in those days, I thought more about like everybody should do it. And I think now, I think CrossFit really got it right in that it's for anyone, but it's not for everyone.
I see.
Like, if like people should learn it, as long as you have the flexibility and mobility to put yourself in the positions to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that people should do it the way CrossFitters do it is kind of silly. Like, you should never, I don't think, as a weight
high rep.
Yeah, like in a WOD or in meaning like doing it for as fast as you can.
Yeah, that shit's scary.
I mean, it's just, it's not effective. You're not going to be good at it. You're, I mean, when you watch the high-level CrossFitters do those movements, they look like they know what they're doing. The bar gets to the same place every time, and it's like a, it's a clean, good movement. When you watch your average soccer mom, muscle mommy doing it in the CrossFit gym, it doesn't look good. Not to like a trained weightlifting coach, and it's not, you're not doing it effectively. You're putting yourself in your poor positions, and that's where those injuries happen, and that's why CrossFit gets a bad name.
Yeah.
But learning the movement, I think it's good for anybody who's flexible enough to do it. The idea of taking the time to learn new things like that is good for most people.
Yeah, most people. What about Eric? Eric, you jumping in on this? You gonna get a training session going today?
No.
Use it or lose it, baby. Yeah, I mean, that was a really fun time. I got, you know, we got pretty decent shape out doing that stuff with you. My chest was bigger than my belly at one point.
there's another good faux pas that I remember from those days. So it was like, I don't do any, everything I do now is performance based. Almost my whole book of clients are competitive Olympic style weightlifters. So I don't do any like, I don't do, and even with that, even if it is a weight class sport, I don't ask them to, you know, diet very often. I have one or two clients that I'm like, yeah, it makes sense for you to cut weight to get to this weight class so that we can compete at this level, or that so that we can win a world or a national championship at this level. But for the most part, I want lifters to lift at wherever they're walking around at, because the idea of cutting, if you're not competitive to win, again, a national or world championship, like Masters World Championship, or like make a national team as a senior, or you can win at the next weight class down and it's close. Like, other than that, I think lifters need to be lifting at their actual weight class.
That makes sense.
But back in the day, there was this whole idea of like chill results. So I was like, we'll take a tape test around Luke's waist. And I didn't think that, you know, like, I don't know, my wife does like sewing stuff. So she had like a little tape measure. I was like, yeah, a little flexible tape measure. I'll bring this.
Yeah.
And it didn't fit around his waist. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, Luke handled it with like, he's like, that's funny. But like, could you imagine if someone had like a really bad like self-image already?
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Oh my God.
You fucking brought a tape measure and it didn't even fit around me. Could like scar people for that.
I forgot about that.
Oh my God. I'll never forget it.
That was funny.
Oh, that was a bad move.
It is what it is.
I mean, I think it was only like.
Yeah, it was a small one.
It was small.
It was like a really small one.
Yeah.
Cause it was a small one, everybody. Cause okay.
Because you're a normal sized person.
I'm a normal sized person. Yeah, that's what it is. It was only, it was a 50 inch.
Yeah. And I'm like a 32. I was like, this will fit around him. Of course it will.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, that was at my biggest. I was almost 290. Almost 290. I'm down. I'm 247 today.
Still a super.
Still a super heavyweight. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see where this tea gets me in the workouts.
But yeah, now I get to, I travel a super lot for the sport of weightlifting. Let's see, last year, Hawaii for level one, Orlando, Colorado Springs, Europe, the Bay Area, still going to Tennessee, Seattle I've been to a couple times to coach and teach, still going to Tennessee this year, and North Carolina at the end of the year. I feel like I'm missing another one in the middle, early part of the year that I went to.
Georgia?
No, not last year. The year before that, in Atlanta in December. Next year, we'll start with Austin, Hawaii, Columbus, Reno, Louisiana.
Reno. What a city that is.
Yeah. And that's just the first five or so months.
Wow. That's wild. That's a lot.
Costa Rica next year.
Costa Rica. I want to go to Costa Rica. Have you been there before?
No. Masters Nationals will be there.
That's pretty dope.
Or Masters Pan Ams, excuse me. Masters Pan Ams will be there.
Yeah.
This year I went to Masters Worlds in Krakow, Poland, which was a pretty amazing trip. I didn't do that well, but...
You competed?
I competed poorly. I don't know. I do this journaling practice every day where, like, I write about what I'm grateful for. I write about what yesterday looked like, and just a way to kind of reflect and did I do all the things I wanted to do yesterday? Yes, no. Did I do good things? Yes. Highlight good things, highlight things I want to improve on. And then what I'm gonna want to kind of like a to-do list about today, and then like some goals or like mission statements of like who I am, how I want things to go. And I kept writing for months and months leading up to it. I will lead my team to successful worlds. We will all go 4 for 6 or better. And I was the first one out, and I went 1 for 6. I made my first lift. When we got home, my lifter was like, I'm really glad you made that 85 kilo snatch. And I was like, yeah, me too, because otherwise I would have missed them all. Which isn't necessarily true. I put the two of my three clean jerks over my head, and the referees judged them to be not good enough, which I probably would have as well. So, any rate, I did what the worst thing you can do in the sport of weightlifting, which is called bomb out, meaning you missed all three of one of your lifts, and then thus you don't get a total, and you didn't do what you came to do. Lifters will make two lifts, and they're like, at least you got a total, which is, no one really feels that, except maybe the coach who is trying to cheer you up.
Yeah.
But then all of my other lifters did 4 for 6 or better. It was the first time I actually manifested that in my journal to actually happen. I write it for all the meets we go to.
That's fucking
awesome.
We're
going to go 4 for 6 or better. And two of my lifters were pretty Christian. I was like, I sacrificed myself like Jesus on the cross so that you guys could all have a good meet.
Yes.
That was super fun, though. One of my girls won a world championship. One of my guys battled a legitimate, like, real Polish Olympian dude who had totaled 400 and something in the same time that Shane had been lifting. And these guys now in their Shane and 45, totaling like low threes, 302, 303. We did that week, that meet. But it was going back and forth between the Olympian, DeLega, Robert DeLega, and Shane. It was super, pretty exciting.
Sounds like a Rocky villain. Kind of Drago.
Yeah, he kind of looked like that guy, too. And like his first, like, Shane went. And his first snatch was easy and good, as it should be. And then DeLega went and made something, I don't know, 5 or 10 kilos heavier, and it made it look easier and better. And then Shane went above him, and then DeLega went above him, and then DeLega missed his third. So we were, like, in there right up until the very end. We put at the for Shane's last lift, we put what was currently DeLega's world record on the bar. by and beat it by 1 kilo.
You keep kicking a metal thing down there.
I don't think so. Maybe it's the chair.
You keep kicking something. It's like cha-ching, cha-ching. You can hear it in the headphones.
So we put DeLega's world record on the bar, and then Shane went out and famously said, "I forgot to tuck in before I started my pull, and I hit myself in the junk."
Oh.
So he did not make that lift. And then DeLega, but if he had made it, DeLega went out to take the same lift and missed it as well.
Oh.
So DeLega went out to beat his own world record by one and couldn't do it. So if Shane
didn't
had done
hit his
it,
own junk, though?
He didn't hit it. I don't, yeah. He at least cleaned it, I think. Shane's wife was in the stand. She's like, "You can see it. I have it on video."
You should get 5 minutes to recoup, just like the UFC nut shot.
Yeah,
they should give you some recovery time for that.
But my other girl who won the world championship came over there with basically COVID and was able to win on what should have been her second to last warm up. That's how dominant she is in her weight class and field. So.
And she had COVID.
Pretty much.
For athletes, it's a nothing burger.
Well, it did end up taking quite a bit out of her. That's why we had to open so low, and that's why, I mean, even with the competition being so low, if she had come in healthy, we would have opened much, much, much over what she needed to actually win.
Yeah.
So it took quite a bit out of her for actually quite a long time, even after that meet. So
the last two times I had it was a sneeze. Basically, it's a fucking sneeze. It was like a sniffle and a sneeze, and like, okay.
The only time I had it was a positive test. That's the only way you could have known.
Yeah.
Don't want to get us banned.
Get COVID, us banned.
COVID's real, everyone.
We're not. No, I'm not. COVID's real. It's real. We're not on YouTube. I don't do this shit on YouTube. Fuck YouTube. YouTube's a bunch of censoring. Google and YouTube and Facebook, they're all a bunch of monsters, dude.
Monsters.
Yeah. Monsters. Yeah, I'm not about it. No, we put it on, it's on Apple, it's on, where is it? It's on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's on all the other platforms.
Nice.
But not on YouTube. This could be on YouTube. This talk.
This talk.
You know, but like some talks, if I go hard about a topic, like what I was talking about in the car, the WHO stuff, WHO is the one who regulates YouTube, or not regulates, but YouTube's policies are in sync with the WHO. If you look it up, and I have, because I've gotten strikes on YouTube, so I had to look it up, and it says if you go against the WHO's recommendations. Yeah. Which is scary. That is scary shit. Careful. Bumping into the...
Whoa. Let's see.
It's your cameras. It's your wheel.
Got it.
Yeah, just stay centered.
Sit still.
Stay centered.
Sit still, buddy.
Sit still. Or the WHO will come get you. Yeah. No, man, I'm proud of you, bro. You're fucking killing it, dude.
Thank you, sir.
The man. Yeah, you have one of those victorious spirits, you know?
That's a cool way of putting it.
Yeah, you just have one of those from the ashes. You have a phoenix-like spirit.
I have the phoenix tattoo on my arm.
Yeah, well, you should move to Phoenix. That was my pitch. You should move to Phoenix.
I think my mom would like that.
Yeah, dude, I would love that. You could podcast all the time. Fuck yeah, we work out together. I'd love that. Jeff's here. Big Hauser.
Yeah.
Get to see him a lot. Him and his kids. Four kids. He's got two kids that are in baseball that are fucking crushing it.
Nice.
Yeah. Like just striking people out and hitting home runs and shit. Pretty wild.
Pretty dope.
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool. Plus you're wearing shorts and a t-shirt. You're not wearing that in Portland.
No.
Right now.
The vitamin D.
Yeah. Vitamin D is good for the soul and your immune system, it turns out. It's good to fight COVID.
Yeah.
Turns out. Was it like a 80% or 90%? I can't remember the statistic, but at one point during the pandemic, a large percentage of the people that were hospitalized had, from COVID, had vitamin D deficiencies.
Oh, yeah, because we were all stuck inside.
Yeah.
Don't go outside. That's what the COVID is.
Yeah, that can make it worse. So now we can sell this vaccine. Let's try and make it as worse as possible. So we can try and sell it to six-month-olds who don't need it. Yeah. What a fucking fiasco. But hopefully it doesn't turn into something bigger that can, you know, like this was a good test run for control.
For sure.
Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't turn into something bigger. That's all my fear is. It's like we're talking about these great stories, success stories, your success story, you're overcoming, and like all of a sudden you don't get to fly anymore unless you do what they tell you to.
Yeah.
Like how crazy would that be?
I like flying.
Yeah.
We're going places.
You smoke certain things. Sorry, that's a hazard. You can't do those. Can't do those and get on the fly list. We need you to put this monitor in your bloodstream so that we can see what's going in and out of your blood at all times.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah, well.
But I am going to Thailand.
You think you'd be safe? You think that Thailand would be safe from the nuclear holocaust that may be coming? What country would be safe?
I don't know.
Because, like, okay, so let's say China, America, Russia, Iran, they all, like, shoot each other. Does that affect the whole world?
Probably. Yes, definitely. I'm pretty sure that's a nuclear winner.
So Thailand's fucked?
Yeah, everything. It's all over.
It's all over.
Okay. So that doesn't happen.
It very well could. I don't know how we got here. I'm sorry, Joe.
Hope not.
I mean, it's looking like that's what they want to do, though, right? I mean, maybe not in the world, but they do definitely want more war for more money laundering. That's what they're doing. Money laundering your and my tax dollars into big corporations like Raytheon and...
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think this isn't to get off on a tangent, but I think a lot of people...
We like tangents around here.
People decry the defense budget, and they think it's going to, like... I mean, you don't necessarily think it's going to soldiers, but I think a lot of people think, like, I don't want to... The defense budget, it's going to go to the generals and the soldiers. Those guys don't need money. But, like, the defense budget goes to everybody. Like, my wife's income is completely tied to the defense budget. Both of her last jobs. Mm-hmm. Three of her last jobs. Like, it ties into everybody. And it's, yes, Raytheon is, like, a huge defense contractor, but they're also small ones that... But it goes to everybody.
Everybody?
Yeah.
Doesn't go to me. It doesn't go to everybody if it doesn't go to me. Can't say that. It
goes to lots of people.
Does it go to you?
Yeah.
Through your wife?
Yeah.
But exactly. Not to you exactly. Without your wife?
Exactly. Well.
Does it go to Eric? I'm not paying Eric through a contract.
I'm just saying it goes to a general.
It goes to a lot of things, for sure.
It goes to a lot of people. It
doesn't go to everybody, but it goes to a lot of things. Right. But that's what you said.
I didn't say literally everybody.
Well, you said everybody. So you got to clarify. We don't need malinformation, misinformation here, Joe. Now we're really going to get kicked off of YouTube. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, it gets... There's definitely been a big upward transfer of wealth over the last 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Trillions of dollars have been transferred to the elites.
That's for sure.
I mean, how much did Jeff Bezos' stock go up?
Who's that? That's the
Amazon
guy?
I mean, he basically doubled or something. What? Look it up, Eric. How much did Amazon stock go up from 2019 to 2022? At least everybody's like on to this vaccine scam. was like less than 2% of the population's getting the new booster. At least we're learning our lesson about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for not my dad. My dad got it for sure. My dad's all about it. Still scared sitting at home with his mask on.
Oh.
Yeah. Sad.
I don't know. I didn't get this last one. My wife did. She got a flu shot too. I haven't got a flu shot ever.
Yeah, I got one and I got super sick from it. That's why I never got another one. I was like, well, I'll just take my chances with the flu. Why am I going to get myself sick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're injecting the flu.
Yeah. I didn't know how it worked. That was dumb.
So we'll give you a few snapshots here. So we have January 2020. So we're kind of like right at the start. We're at 92.8. And then like just later on in that year of August, it went to 171.
Whoa.
Nearly a double.
Whoa.
And it's been going kind of like holding steady until, well, I guess not real steady as the stock market could go. Around March of 2022, it was still in this range of 163. It went all the way down to 85 in January 2023. So in 3 years, they're like right back where they started. And then the latest one we have at 124.
But they already made their money. They already made their money, right?
Yeah, for like 3 years, they were in that.
Doubled.
Like.
So it went from, did you say 90 to 170?
95 to 171, yeah. In like half a year.
In less than half.
For
in 7 months.
A year. Oh, gosh. Like, it looks like. Maybe like a year.
Year and a half.
It stayed around 140 to 190 range. And then it went down all the way back to like starting where they were in January 2023. And then this latest one, October, they're still up.
Well, all these senators are fucking buying stock in Raytheon. And I'm sure they bought stock in Amazon before this shit.
For sure.
Yeah, I would too. Just give me those details. Just share that with the rest of us. You know, if you're going to insider trade, let's insider trade the whole country. We'll just get our whole country rich. I guess it wouldn't work then if everybody invested. Saturate the stock and make it worthless.
Isn't that what happened with GameStop?
Mm-hmm.
I got into the last end of that.
Did you?
Deal. Oh.
You lost money?
Oh, the worst. Like, not thousands. Just like hundreds, but just
that's
like
good.
The dumbest. Oh, yeah. It's going to go to the moon.
I still have money in Bitcoin. And, like, not too long ago, I put in another 1,000. I was like, that was probably a year ago, but I don't know. Investing's hard. I mean, I think, you know, real estate is a sure thing over time.
Yeah.
But even that, what are you going to get out of it? 10% a year?
That's pretty good.
I mean, is it?
What's the stock market supposed to be?
Fucking take your money. I put fucking five, 10 grand, something like that, in the stock market in 2018. By 2019, it was a little over a year. I was like, okay, well, it's got to pay dividends in 1 year. Otherwise, what's the point? 12 months on the board. Am I making money or not? That's a good enough amount of time to say, okay, annually, did I make money on this? Nope, not a dime.
Not a dime.
Not a dime. I didn't lose money, but I didn't make money. So I fucking sold all my shares. I shouldn't have done that because I think I had Tesla, Facebook. I had like some of these stocks that would have gone up during the pandemic. Yeah, Microsoft,
Amazon.
What did I have Amazon? I don't think I had Amazon. Google. Yeah, I should have got Amazon. Shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Indeed.
Yeah, shoulda, woulda, coulda. You gotta go.
I do.
All right. Well, shit. It was fun. Nice short one. Your story is an awesome story. It's a story of overcoming and triumph. I always tell everybody I read this book by Ray Dalio. Have you heard of him? Mm-mm. He's a hedge fund guy, Bridgewater. He started from nothing. He's a, you know, gazillionaire, whatever. But he wrote a book called Principles.
Yeah.
And goes over his principles for business and life. One thing I like that he said that I always quote to my employees is like, look, he's been poor, he's been super rich, and he's been everywhere in between. And the one thing that never changes, no matter how much or how little you have in monetarily, is the amount of problems that are going to come your way. So he said, life isn't necessarily about how much money you make, but life is about, to him, is about adversity and the adversity that comes your way and how you deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, and something like drug addiction is a big adversity. Not a lot of people survive that. You know, I don't know what the statistics are. You know,
well,
50-50. I don't know.
Let's end on this because we talked about it a little bit when we were sitting at lunch. I think when I was in the field, we heard statistics like the clients would be like only 10% of us ever get clean. And that may be true for that one treatment episode. If there's 100 people in treatment, 10 of them might stay clean from that time forever for on. But I think, and this is what we were saying at lunch, is that addicts sometimes pat themselves on the back for fucking 20 more years after they get clean. And that's not like, yes, great, you stop doing drugs. Yes, some people, and it's fair to say that some people have the deck stacked more against them than others, mm-hmm. whether it's racial, socioeconomic, mm-hmm. but the combination of both, which is usually the case anyway, or whatever, or like a amount of trauma that they've had to deal with as a kid that made it worse for them to get out of. But in general, addicts should look at, and like I said, the way I see it is like, it's not hard to see that when you're doing heroin, you shouldn't be doing heroin. Like,
yeah.
And again, it goes back to like how much trauma you dealt with and how much chaos you were raised in, but for a lot of addicts end up in, a lot of people that end up in addiction came from fairly normal middle class backgrounds. So if you grew up in a house and you always had food on the table and you find yourself living under a bridge, it's not that hard to ultimately go, hey, I'm gonna do this different and do it different. So down the road, on a long enough timeline, most people get it. I'd say 80% of people get it. 10% of people don't, and maybe it's more like 60% of people get it, 30% die, and 10% don't, and that's the way it is. You know yeah. what I mean? So the vast majority are gonna get it somewhere in the long-term picture of it because it's easy to see that, like, it's not the way to live. No one wants to live that way except the people that's all they've known. If you were a kid from the time you were, like, an infant, like, no one took care of you, and then when you became a toddler and a kid, like, people abused you and no one took care of you, and every 6 months your mom was taking you to a new hotel room because the last guy she was with was abusing her and beating her, and you never had food, like, and then you find yourself on the street, that's just all you know. So those are the people that kind of get stuck in that field and sometimes don't get out. But the vast majority of people that had a normal-ish upbringing, you get it somewhere down the road. You just get sick and tired of, so they say, being sick and tired.
Yeah, sick and tired of being sick and tired. And
so I don't know.
With fentanyl though, might be a little higher.
Fentanyl's worse. That's a whole other podcast. But yeah. Like you know, yes, you can be happy and proud of yourself, but that's about it. And you put that and keep it to your. I guess I don't keep it to myself. I talk about it, but like I said, you should take it with a grain of salt when people are like, I was an addict and now I'm not. Good for you, buddy. Go to work.
Yeah.
Get to work. It's get my birthday. Work. No one cares. How old are you?
Yeah.
I'm 37. Shut up. Go to work.
Go to work. Be a member of society.
That's
yeah.
Right. That's, you know.
Yeah. Do something. All right, buddy.
All right, cool. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. It was fun. Every time you come back here, we'll do it.
All right. Sounds like fun.
All right. See you, everybody.